Attention, attention, all personnel. Incoming podcast. This is MASH Matters.
We're back. MASH Matters, the podcast celebrating the greatest television series of all time. That would be MASH, you know, the show that ran on CBS for so many years. And one of the stars of that show is joining me right here, as he does every episode, Mr. Jeff Maxwell. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Ryan Patrick. It's great being here once again on this wonderful podcast to celebrate the world's greatest television show in the history of television.
Yes.
Oh, and TV and radio even, and phonographs and telegraphs. Can you imagine doing MASH via telegraph?
It would be hard to watch, that's for sure.
It would be.
For you youngsters, Google it.
Yeah.
So today, we're not going to be doing much talking, Jeff, because we're going to let the listeners talk.
Yay!
This is going to be a voicemail-heavy episode. We have a stockpile of voicemails that have accumulated over time, and we are going to clear them out because the new models are coming in. And so we're going to play a lot of voicemails. I think we have 19 voicemails to play today, Jeff.
Oh my gosh. And how long is our podcast last?
It's 19 voicemails long.
Wow.
Some people have questions. Some have comments. Some just want to talk about their MASH experience. Thank you to everybody who has called in and left us a voicemail. If you would like to leave a voicemail, you can do that by calling and leaving a voicemail under 3 minutes in length at 513-436-4077.
And we even help with relationship problems as well. So certainly call in any of those you might have in your coupledom.
Yes, the doctor is in.
It's $600 an hour, isn't it, Ryan? Is that what, I think it's $600.
Sure, yeah, but it's in 3 minute increments.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's just jump right in. What do you say?
I'm ready to jump. Hey.
All right, here we go.
Hi, boys. It's Adam Bauer from Independence, Missouri. I had a quick comment. A couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago, I was watching the old miniseries North and South about the Civil War, and I noticed that our old buddy David Ogden Stiers was in the cast, and he played his character with all the pomposity that Charles Emerson Winchester had. And so I thought you'd be interested in knowing about that. Love the podcast. Keep it going.
All right. That's in support of David's pomposity.
Yes.
Or pomposity, one of the two.
Yes.
And he certainly did it very well. It used to get all over me when I'd be around him. I'd go home, my wife would say, "You have a lot of pomposity on you. What are you doing?"
And that stains, too. It's tough. David Ogden Stiers, yes, he was in this miniseries called North and South, which I remember when that aired. It was 1985 is when the first one aired. And it was a big deal because it had a stellar cast. I mean, everybody was in that movie. And it was a miniseries. So back in the day, these limited series that you can binge on Netflix and all that, they would be called miniseries and they would air over a series of nights on TV. So you had Monday night would be part one, Tuesday night would be part three, Wednesday night part four. Sometimes they would go the whole week. It was kind of a popular thing there in like the 80s and early 90s. North and South was a big one. And yes, David Ogden Stiers, he portrayed Congressman Sam Green. And if you Google David Ogden Stiers in North and South, you will see that David Ogden Stiers could rock a pair of mutton chops.
Yes, he could.
Not many people can get away with that, but he can.
Well, he could rock a pair of a lot of things, I'm telling
you.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
With all that pomposity, he could rock anything.
That's right. Two other MASH connections in the cast, both were guest stars, Patrick Swayze and our friend Mariette Hartley, who we just talked about recently. All right, let's move on. Let's hear from Barbara.
Hi, I'm Barbara from Philadelphia. And I had an idea for interesting guest or guests for MASH Matters. It would be really interesting to hear from some of the guys who were patients on the operating tables, and especially the ones who had to go through some really strange treatments. That would be fun to talk to somebody like that. So if you can find someone, that would be interesting. Thank you.
Interesting.
It is interesting, and I would love to, especially the ones who were on the operating table. I would love to talk to one of them. Mm-hmm. How often can you say, you know, Alan Alda operated on me?
And you really don't want Alan Alda to operate on you either.
Well, not in real life, no.
Yeah, not in real life.
You really don't want Frank Burns to operate on you. That's what you don't want.
I I can attest to the somewhat dullness of laying there. I did it once in the very early days of my MASH connections.
Oh, yeah?
And I did.
How am I just now? We're at episode 120, and I'm just now finding out that you laid on one of the operating tables?
I laid on one of the operating tables.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't like to talk about it because everybody gets so excited.
Wow.
But I did lay on one of the operating tables during an operation. And it was a little dull.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
You're laying there and you have to be quiet and not do anything. And everybody else is wandering around. And you sometimes want to fall asleep because there's just nothing to do.
Right.
And you lay there. So it's not terribly exciting. I guess, you know, for me anyway, it wasn't. Perhaps somebody coming into it. But most of the people who were patients and laying there during operations were background artists. So most of them were really familiar with everybody and everybody was familiar with them. So unless it was like a guest star who came in and they were wounded and had to have an operation, it was pretty dull. And now for a guest star, it would be different because they had an agenda, they had a reason for being there, and they probably had something to say or do while they were laying there before they went under anesthesia. But if you were just an average wounded guy laying there, it was not exciting.
Oh, wow. See, now I would love to know, I would love to be able to figure out which episode you were on the operating table. Or season two is probably where it happens somewhere, right?
I would say, yeah, probably.
Early in season two, probably somewhere in there. Jeff is on the operating table. All right, I'm putting our MASH detectives on the case. Start pausing and looking in those early season two episodes and see if you can find our friend Jeff on the operating table.
I think I pretended I was dead and pulled a sheet over my face just for the heck of just to give myself a little more character.
That way you can sleep. Right?
right. Start snoring and everything. Nobody cares.
I just flatlined right there on the table just to get a nap. But again, we'll put the call out too. If anybody knows somebody who was a background artist on MASH or one of the patients or, you know, one of the guest stars who ever found themselves in the operating room or in post-op, please have them contact us. We'd love to talk to them.
Yeah, there was a guy, and I forgive me, and I apologize to he and his family. I cannot remember his name, but he was in MASH numbers of years, and he used to do some little parts here and there. And he, for some reason, they loved putting him on the gurneys. He was on a gurney being dragged in and out of the place and put in, and he was being operated on. He was going to sleep. He was waking up. And he'd be fun to talk to because he kind of made a career out of it.
Yeah.
Right. So I'll look up his name and maybe we can find him.
Okay. Well, you know who you are. If you're listening, call us.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of calling us, let's hear what Brian has to say.
Hi, guys. This is Brian Hackwith, and I'm one of your Patreons, and I'm privileged to support you guys because the podcast just really cracks me up and also pulls on the heartstrings as well. I think you've got a fantastic thing going. I've waited to give you a message until I got through all of the episodes because I found your podcast last fall, and I've been catching up with all the past ones, so I finally have done that. And I just have to say, I think you guys have a wonderful thing going here, and hope it just continues, you know, for another several hundred episodes or however long you guys want to do it. I found MASH as a kid, born in 1976, and have a similar story to all the different folks you've had interact with you. Caught it maybe at the tail end when it was on TV, but mostly in reruns, watching it with my dad. And really, I just have to say that whenever I have a bad day, when I come home, I pop in an episode or stream an episode of MASH, and it doesn't really matter which one it is. It always makes me feel better. I really agree with you guys that it's the best TV show ever made. There are a few up that are up there in my mind, too, that I enjoy. But MASH is up there for sure. And it's amazing to see that here we are, you know, 60 years later almost, and it's still going strong with lots of the current generation and new folks. So anyway, again, I just appreciate everything you guys do, and I can tell you have fun doing it, even when it's emotional. But thank you so much for what you do and for kind of keeping this alive for the next generation as well. So you guys have a great day. This is Brian Hackwith. I'm calling from the Northwest, Washington State. Bye.
Wow.
Just a little encouragement and acknowledgement of the work we're doing. So we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, indeed, Brian. Thank you. Well, we're privileged to have you as a listener. So thank you for being that and for being a Patreon member and so forth. We really appreciate it. And gosh, you know, you're right. Some umpteen years later and MASH is still going strong and we're still talking about it and people are still watching it and talking about the shows and wondering about it. It is an amazing thing. It never ceases to amaze me that the show has had this kind of longevity to the point that everybody's still talking about it. So, but again, thank you for your kind words. It's really wonderful. Thank you, Brian.
Yes, thank you, Brian. Your voicemail meant a lot to us. We really appreciate that. All right, let's move on. Here's Cheryl.
Hi, this is Cheryl Phillips from Scranton, Pennsylvania. Love the podcast. Just as much as I love MASH, I watch it almost every single day in syndication, just like I did the original series when it first aired. But I have a lingering question. After 50 years, I really want to know what Hawkeye was knitting on the show. In many of the episodes, you'll see him knitting, but you never see a completed piece. So I'd like to know, what was he knitting? And did Alan Alda, Hawkeye, ever complete the piece? Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Okay, we've talked about knitting on this podcast before.
We have?
Oh, yeah. It was a thing. In the early days of MASH Matters, we talked about knitting, and all of a sudden, we started getting like a lot of feedback from the knitting community about knitting. So I'm not going to stir the pot again with all the knitters out there and crocheters. And I know knitting and crocheting are two different things. And you know, I didn't know that at first. And I have no idea what he was knitting. And I don't know that he was actually knitting, because there's a TikTok user called Not Fancy Knitter. She does a series of TikToks called Can They Knit? People knitting on TV and movies. She like grades them if they're actually knitting or not.
That's pretty cute. I like that.
I'm going to play just a little bit of this audio here.
Welcome back to Can They Knit, the series where we look at knitting in movies and TV and see if anyone who's pretending to can actually knit. Up next, MASH. Episode 16 of Season 5 starts with Hawkeye knitting on something. Hawkeye's holding his needles right, and he's tensioning the arm between his ring finger and his pinky, which looks amazing, but then he just sits there not doing anything with it. He does do this back and forth motion, which is pretty weird. I don't know what that's supposed to be, but it's not knitting. You do see him make a single knit stitch. Looks like he gets it right, but he doesn't look very comfortable. So to sum up, MASH, 3.5 out of 5 stars. I think Alan Alda, or Hawkeye, can knit a little bit, but he didn't really do anything about it, so 50-50.
So there you go. Maybe he was knitting, maybe he wasn't, I don't know. But the question was, what is he knitting? Mm-hmm. No clue. There were two episodes specifically where we know where he was quote-unquote knitting. One was 38 Across, the other one was The More I See You. But what he was knitting is left to our imagination.
Kind of like a Rorschach test. We can all pick whatever we think he was knitting.
There you go.
You know,
yeah.
Grandmother, a poodle, a duck, something.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Maybe he was knitting a cozy for the still.
Yeah.
To keep the still warm. I don't know.
So I like her, TikTok? Is that what she's on?
Yeah, we'll put a link to that video in our show notes too.
Can They Knit? I'm glad nobody has one called Can They Act, because that would be very difficult. I would not want to hear comments.
That's just called Twitter. Okay, here's a short voicemail from CJ.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, Jeff. CJ here from Australia. You may know me as the guy that asked about Discord in the last episode. My question is, liver or fish?
There you go. I like he gets straight to the point. The other thing I like about this voicemail is when we get these voicemails, we also get a translation from Google. Google is not great at translating. So all the voicemail said, according to Google, was liberal fish.
Liberal fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Liver or fish. Okay. Yeah. Hey, I'll throw in mine. You know, I really like fish. Really like fish. I eat a lot of salmon. I grill it. I bake it. The Maxwell house is very, very big on eating salmon because it's good for you. And liver, I once had a huge thing for liver. And for some reason, I had never had liver and onions. And I was a young whippersnapper. And somebody said, here's liver and onions. And I ate it, and I thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever eaten in my life. It was sautéed liver and sautéed onions. And so I ate liver and onions for about 10 days straight. I could not get enough liver and onions. Huh. And then the 11th day, I threw up for about an hour. And I have never, ever thought of liver and onions again in my life, ever. So
I will fall on the side of fish as well. But I will say that I've never had liver and onions, nor have I ever really wanted to. So I can't say that I dislike liver because I've never really eaten it. My mom used to make chicken livers wrapped in bacon. Mm. So I have eaten those before, and those were okay, mainly because of the bacon. So I have to say fish. Now, what kind of fish? I mean, I can eat several types of fish, mainly if they're deep fried.
Yes. Yeah. Well, a Chilean sea bass is another favorite of mine. Oh. A Chilean sea bass is about $80 a pound.
Well, I will not be getting that anytime soon then.
Yeah. I'm very comfortable with the salmon. I do like chopped liver. Okay. All of those of you who like chopped liver, I do like that and have occasionally eaten that. But liver is just liver.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go, CJ. Okay.
Right. CJ, thank you.
Let's move on. Here's Dan.
Hi, my name is Daniel Shank. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. I just stumbled across your podcast. I've been doing another rewatch of MASH. I do it about once a year because it's a show I grew up watching with my grandpa and dad. And I never knew about your podcast until about a week ago. I was Googling for MASH podcasts because I needed more content. And so I find myself just watching the series when I'm home, when I'm out at work, I'm listening to the podcast. In my free time, I'm playing the MASH trivia board game that came out a while ago by myself most of the time. Just one of those shows I've always found comfort in, and I wanted to thank you two for doing what you're doing, and keep on keeping on.
He mentioned the MASH trivia board game. I own that board game.
Ooh.
The Golden Trivia Game MASH Edition. They have the big box that has the game board and the cards and the dice and all that. Then there's also like a smaller box that's just the cards, if you just want the trivia cards. If anybody's interested in that, you can typically find those affordably on eBay. Hmm. But it is fun. Every now and then I'll pull out the cards and just, like he says, he plays the game with himself, which, you know, you shouldn't play with yourself.
Sorry, that's the alarm.
Yeah, go blind.
To play with yourself alarm. Yeah. It's amazing these things come in.
Yeah, but I have done that where I've pulled a card out and read a random question and see if I can answer it. Some of them are hard.
I would fail miserably because I just it's been a while and I would just be embarrassing myself if I played.
Yeah, when we do the MASH trivia night, you'll just have to be the host.
I will just sit quietly in the corner.
No, nobody's going to want you on their team probably because they listen to this podcast and they know. Don't ask Jeff.
I'll hand out the crumpets or something. I'm not going to know.
All right. Let's hear from Ed.
Yes. My name is Ed Wallen. I'm calling from Mishawaka, Indiana. I just had a question about the episode in which Hawkeye tries to save a Korean woman who's suspected of being a gorilla, and the phrase SOB was used on the first time, and was just wondering how shocking that was to the rest of the cast, because when I watched the show, and I was stunned that line was used, so I didn't know if anyone else was stunned by that, or if they were prepared for it, if there was any backlash because of it. Thank you, and bye.
So Ed is referring to the episode Gorilla My Dreams, and in one of the most tense, dramatic moments on MASH, Hawkeye calls this guy an SOB.
You have already taken enough of my time, Captain. Can you not see that this woman's life is more important to you than it is to her? I will go now.
You don't want to be late for your killing.
You have done your job. Now I will do mine.
You son of a bitch.
Nowadays, that would be nothing on TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this was the first time on primetime network television that phrase was used. Hmm. You have to assume that, yes, it was shocking at the time because you did not typically hear that said, especially by Alan Alda on one of the most popular shows on TV. And according to the Monster MASH wiki, producers had to apply to the FCC for special dispensation to allow Hawkeye to say the phrase to emphasize the gravity of the scene. It was the first time in broadcast history that the phrase would be allowed on the air. Several newspapers and periodicals announced the decision in advance, which spurred viewers around their TV to hear Alan Alda utter the phrase. That gives you kind of a snapshot of what it was like back then. It was such a big deal that Alan Alda was going to say SOB that they let the newspapers know in advance so that people would know it was coming.
Unbelievable.
Think about it. I mean, that's just unheard of nowadays. But back then, it was a big deal.
Big deal. Get the children out of the room.
Seriously. Yeah. I'm sure there were people who did not watch that episode because of it.
Do we know the writers of that episode?
Well, it was written by Bob Colleary.
Oh, really? Oh, my gosh. Bob Colleary. Oh, my gosh. I know. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Written by, teleplay by both Bob Colleary. Alan Alda directed it.
Wow. I have to write to Bob Colleary and say, hey, we just had a call asking about the SOB. Did you put the SOB in there purposely? Did you do that, Bob Colleary? I want to know right now, what kind of SOB are you? This is interesting. I had no idea. He's a writer. His father was a writer, and he directed a play that a friend of mine was in a long time ago. And he, Bob Colleary, I'm going to write to him and ask him about that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, cool.
By the way, Alan Alda would say that phrase again in Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen.
Aha.
Thank you, Ed, for that. Let's move on here and let's see who's up next. We have Frank.
Hey, Jeff and Ryan. It's your old buddy, Frank Saracino from Bristol, Connecticut. Yes, it's the ESPN Zone. And also, as you know, I reside in our beloved Gary Berghoff's hometown. Listen, I wanted to call because you guys are really on a roll right now. The podcasts have been getting better and better and better. And going way back to the McLean Stevenson episode, the deep dive and the pre-interview that was conducted by the journalist was just extraordinary. As a filmmaker and a documentarian geek, that was just awesome to listen to. Sal Viscuso was great. Having him be the announcer now on the podcast is just terrific. Really, it's been wonderful. And as someone who is passionate about what he does, the documentary on MASH that recently aired that you have discussed in great detail over the last few episodes, I loved it. If I had to choose between the most recent one and the one that aired on Fox 20 years ago, the one you remember that Mike Farrell hosted, I enjoyed them both for different reasons. Obviously, the one from 20 years ago, you had all the living members on the set, which was in and of itself was extraordinary. But if you're looking for the complete Stoop the Nuts documentary as a fan, you guys nailed it. The one that recently aired was superb. I'm going to leave you guys with a question, and I'm very curious to see what you think. What do you think was the single greatest performance from any actor character in the history of the show? I'll tell you mine. I think the singular greatest performance was Harry Morgan's in Old Soldiers. That scene with the entire group gets me every single time, and it comes at a point in the show where you can tell things are winding down, radar is gone, and it really, for me at least, was emblematic of the whole series. Love you guys, and until next time, take my advice, pull on your pants, and slide on the ice.
Well, thank you, Frank. Frank works with ESPN, so he knows a lot about the ins and outs of putting together these documentaries and producing these kinds of shows, so that means a lot coming from him. He asked, what is, in our opinion, the greatest single performance, the best one single moment performance in the series? And Frank, you stole mine. It is what you said, Harry Morgan in the episode Old Soldiers, when he is toasting his comrades.
You were the friends of my youth, my comrades through thick and thin, and everything in between. I drink to your memories. I loved you, fellas. One and all.
That is a powerful moment that gets me every time. But since Frank stole mine, I'm going to say Gary Berghoff in Abyssinia Henry.
Yep, I agree.
Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake's plane was shot down over the Sea of Japan. It spun in. There were no survivors.
Gary, we've said this on the show before, and you know, McLean Stevenson said on the show that Gary was the best actor. I think that Gary disappeared into his character more than any other actor on that show. And in that moment, you felt the weight and the gravity of what he was dealing with, the announcement he was going to make. And so since Frank took mine, I'm going to say Gary stole the show in Abyssinia Henry.
There was one episode where Private Igor fell over drunk. His physicality when he was trying to express the joke and tell the joke, but he couldn't get through the whole joke because he was so drunk that he fell over backward and passed out. I believe, ladies and gentlemen, that is one of the finest physical comedic moments in television history. That's what I have to say.
Colonel, see if I've got this right. This farm girl invites three guys over to her house. A Boy Scout, a lumberjack, and a...
Well, I still don't get it.
Why you did not receive an Emmy for that performance is beyond me.
I don't understand it, Ryan. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate your sympathy there. And when Gary came in and read what he read, expressed it so beautifully, Ryan, he disappeared into his character. I think he was the best actor on the show. I really do.
Yeah.
And it's not just that moment. He had moments through the whole series.
Oh, yeah.
That you just go, oh, my God, wow. And
yes.
Funny stuff, really funny stuff, and little teeny tiny things that he would do that just explode when you watch him.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
Our next caller has a lot to say about Margaret's best moments.
Hi, this is Heath Daniels, here to give you a insight into what I think the best moment is for me in MASH. When I started thinking about it, you know, I realized best moment and best episode were two different things. Especially with what I've chosen, it's not a link to just one episode, but I think the best moment is Margaret Houlihan's transition from being kind of a person that is kind of run over and doesn't have a strong personality to being a strong individual woman. You know, my wife and I, when we watch, we really look forward to this change. Episodes like Bombed, Season 3, Episode 15, where Trapper tries to have his way with her in the shed. You know, that's the most cringy I've seen in MASH, and it's hard to watch. And also in Comrades in Arms, when she just gives up to Hawkeye, Season 6, Episode 12 and 13. But then she starts to transition, which I like, and when she has her divorce, in Season 7, Episode 2, Peace on Us, starts to realize that she's important and not always to give in to the guy. And then also in Season 7, Episode 19, Hot Lips back, that's when the general's in town and has an interview, the nurse's triage, and he wants to go back to the way they used to be, where they would do things together and she would get promotions, but she said no to that. And so that was really the two big points that kind of pushed her into where she is later. It's like in Season 7, Episode 8, Major Ego, the captain is there supposedly to interview Charles, but he ends up making passes at Margaret. And after it's over, she just says, I didn't like him, instead of just following him on like she would have in the past. Also, I mentioned the last two real fast. Season 8, Episode 14, Stars and Stripes. Scully's last visit when she decided he wasn't her type of guy. And the last one was in Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, Season 11, Episode 16, where she decided to do what she wanted to do instead of her father. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Those are Margaret Houlihan's greatest hits, according to Heath.
You know, I have to say something about it. I think he's touched on something. There are really tremendous moments from like Gary Berghoff and Harry Morgan that are outstanding. But over the 11 years, you know, if you watch the shows, there are little moments that are outstanding by every single person who was there. And if you find them, you know, they're not always very apparent, but watching the show, you'll see things from Alan Alda and Mike Farrell and everybody who is connected with the show. Giving a moment that is just brilliant. And you go, wow, this is really terrific stuff. And everybody from Loretta to Gary to the original cast, McLean, everybody, I watch it and think, good grief, you people are really good. I mean, not everything was brilliant and perfect, but boy, there are brilliant moments that are, I think, are as a totality, kind of knit the tapestry of MASH and knit it to the point that that's why we like it so much. And it's withstood the test of time because there are those brilliant little moments that have been written and have been acted that are just outstanding, I think.
There you go, bringing up knitting again. All right, here we go. Let's move on. This is from John.
Hi, Jeff and Ryan. This is John. I'm from West Tennessee. I've always been a fan of MASH ever since I discovered it, probably in the first season. I was a teenager at the time, but I just always liked it. And I've been listening to the podcast and really enjoyed for a long time. The question I have is, was MASH ever shown in South Korea? I know that other countries were brought up, but then a few years ago, I also had an exchange student that was from South Korea. And I asked her if she had heard of the show, and she said she hadn't. And she watched it a few times with me while she was here. And I figured it was probably on Armed Forces TV there, but I just wasn't sure if it was ever shown on any of the local South Korean networks or anything that he knew. I'll be waiting for a response. Thanks.
Well, let me say this about that. I was in South Korea in 1974 on my second USO tour there. And MASH was very popular with the military.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know whether just the military was able to see it on television or it was broadcast all over the country and they watched it when everybody else did. I don't know.
Well, I do.
You do? Okay. All right.
Thanks to our friend, Eric White, the MASH historian. He actually has an article on his website that gives a pretty thorough breakdown of South Korea's history with the series. We'll put a link to that article in the show notes. But in a nutshell, South Koreans didn't really appreciate the way they were represented in the series.
Aha.
Also, at the time of the series, the new South Korean regime, they were more into modernization, mm-hmm. and they didn't want to perpetuate the image of South Korea that was presented in MASH. So South Korea banned the show from airing in the country.
Wow.
It probably did air on Armed Forces television, but in South Korea, it was not on their network.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I guess South Koreans are not known for satire. Their humor is more broad, and so the jokes likely didn't land like they did here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not it's still banned, I do not know. So if you're listening in South Korea, the only reason you would probably be listening in South Korea is if you knew what MASH was, so mm-hmm. let us know.
Do you know what year they did that? What year they chose to ban it?
I do not.
Yeah, I was there in 1969 and then again in 1974. And in 1969, it was a fairly, quote, backward country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not a modernized city at all. And you walked four blocks and you were out on farmland. And then in 1974, kaboom! I mean, it just exploded in this modern, fantastic city that was extraordinary, could compete with any modern city. So they really did make a serious push at getting themselves into the modern era. Mm-hmm. And, I kind of appreciate their thought, hey, that we don't want to go back. We don't want to be known as this quaint little farmland community.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be a modern city. I get it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Here's another John.
Hello, Ryan and Jeff. This is John J. Cashman from New Jersey. I found it's interesting to keep track of the cast of MASH and their earlier acting appearances. For example, the earliest appearance I found of Alan Alda was in a 1958 episode of Sergeant Bilko with Bill Silvers. Ironically, Mr. Alda played someone who had already been discharged from the Army. I found an appearance of Loretta Swit on an old episode of Hawaii Five-O, but unfortunately her character was murdered in the first 5 minutes, so it was not a very big part. She did better in a couple of episodes of Mannix, but not in any of the Larry Rinville episodes, where we might have had an interesting moment. Did you know that Jamie Farr was in the classic 1955 film The Blackboard Jungle? He appears as a student credited under his original name, Jamal Farrar. And Harry Morgan is, of course, the king of the Internet Movie Database. Starting in the 1940s, he made hundreds of appearances. He was even in State Fair, a movie that was shown at the 4077th and the classic season 11 episode. And, of course, he got an opportunity to do more real acting in any one episode of MASH than in 100 episodes of Dragnet. William Christopher appeared in a couple of episodes of the Andy Griffith Show, including one where he played a doctor. That may explain why he did such a fine job on that tracheotomy in Mulcahy's War in Season 5. But my favorite is a 1972 episode of Bonanza, where Mike Farrell played a doctor. When Ben Cartwright asked him how he developed his skills, he said he was an Army surgeon during the Civil War. I think that explains a lot. I'd like to talk about Jeff Maxwell's Oscar-worthy performance in the Kentucky Fried movie, but my 3 minutes is almost up. So Ryan and Jeffrey, take my advice. Pull down your pants and slide on the ice.
Well, you got out of that one, didn't you? That was pretty clever. Your time is up. Sorry, your time is up. Sure.
Thank you, John. That was fun.
Yeah. And I appreciate the Academy Award connection there. Thank you very much.
Again, you were robbed of that one, too.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's hear from Ken.
Hi, Jeff and Ryan. This is Ken from Michigan. Thank you so much for producing this show. It's so awesome to hear all these extra stories, wakes them up. By far, Season 7, my favorite episode is Point of View. And it's because of the legacy that Charles Dubin, the director, left us. I like the episode for what it is, to be able to immerse myself as that patient when he's given his sight back. And, you know, as a young boy, when I learned that the camp burned down in 82, and I thought, someday I'm going to go there and visit all these great people. And I was just heartbroken when it was gone. Ironically, because that episode was shot with that handheld camera, it gave us over 1,700 aerial photos of the camp. There's a technology called photogrammetry, where you can give a computer several pictures of the same object but different points of view. And the computer will calculate the exact shape and texture and look of that object. So I was fortunate enough to get raw copy of that episode and took all 1,700 of those images and put it up to a really big fancy supercomputer. And I was able to step into a 3D model of the camp. You know, that camp is lifeless. There's nothing there except the moment in time that that was captured. But it's been really neat to stand on the edge of the helicopter pad where Colonel Potter and Radar stood while sharing that cigar waiting for Frank to come back. Or I've built the basketball hoop, and I have not been able to beat Hoops Potter in a consistent number of shots. I've even sat on the pole like Klinger did for 15, 20 minutes. I can't figure out how he did it without that complete boredom. So someday I really wish to go to the camp and hike in to Malibu State Park. Even then, I think I would have a sense of missing what's not there. But virtual reality is amazing, and I look forward to someday for all of us MASH fans to be able to go back into the camp, do role-playing, celebrate the greatness of it, play poker in the swamp, race the ambulances around, and go play pinball on the Heatwave pinball machine in the officer's club. So that's why Point of View is by far my favorite, and again, thanks so much for the show, and keep up the great work. Bye-bye, and bye bonds.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
He created a virtual reality version of the camp.
Amazing. Holy moly.
And it's based on actual screen grabs from the episode Point of View, because they did such a great job of showing the entire camp from the air.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just incredible.
Really, really cool. What a deal.
See, the next time when we have a big reunion, we don't have to go to the camp in real life. We can just all put on our headsets and we can come together there in the actual camp from our couch.
Exactly. I like it. We can sit in our underwear and still hang out with in the MASH camp. Yeah.
Right?
This is big.
Because if you hang out in the MASH camp in your underwear, they tend to call the park rangers on you.
Whole different thing. You know, he mentioned Charlie Dubin. Charlie Dubin was a really sweet guy, terrific director, directed more episodes of MASH than any other director. He was part of the family. He was a wonderful person, gentle, kind, smart, pleasant, funny, just a wonderful guy. I really am thankful that I got to work with him for so many years. He was a terrific guy.
I loved when we talked to his daughter, Zan.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. This is an actual voice memo that was sent to us.
Hi, Jeff and Ryan. I'm Kira from Helena, Montana, and I'm 31 years old.
I'm new to the podcast and working my way through the episodes. I just listened to your interview with Gary Berghoff, and he mentioned his daughter owns a restaurant in Red Lodge, Montana. Talk about a small world. Much like Ryan, I didn't like MASH when I was younger. My parents would watch, and I thought it was boring. But eventually I got into it when I was in high school. I just wanted to say that I really feel for Igor. I worked at McDonald's for 11 years, so I know what it's like to slave over a hot table all day and serve less than grateful customers. I just wanted to say thank you for the podcast, keep up the great work, and here's to looking up your old address.
Thank you, Kira. Yeah, I appreciate Kira. That.
That's pretty cool.
I love that she likens Igor at the 4077th to her 11 years at McDonald's.
McDonald's, that's great. Well, if you're still at McDonald's, I hope you're enjoying it. And if you're not, I hope you went someplace else, maybe to Jack in the Box or something.
Yeah, I hope you've been discharged. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kira, as you can tell, she sent us her own voice memo, which you are also welcome to do if you would like to do it. MASHMattersPodcast@gmail.com. Okay, let's move on. Here's Lou.
Hello, Jeff and Ryan. My name's Luke. I've been curious about this for a while. I've read from somewhere that when Charles was first introduced on the show, the writers originally intended for Charles and Margaret to have the same relationship that Margaret had with Frank. I was wondering if you could confirm or deny this. Thank you. Goodbye.
I cannot confirm it, but I think all signs point to yes. That was the first inclination when they brought in Charles, is there might have been a romance between Margaret and Charles. Thankfully, that did not come to fruition. I don't think that would have worked. They were able to antagonize one another, and that was a much more interesting, I think, relationship between the two of them. But there's a link on the MASH4077TV.com that was posted a few years ago where he invited a discussion in the comments about whether or not a romance between Margaret and Charles would have been a good idea. And I'll put the link to this in the show notes. I think overwhelmingly, most people said no, but it is an interesting read if you'd like to dive in and see what other people think. But just because he was replacing Frank didn't mean that he had to replace Frank in all ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, me too. Agreed. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I would have much rather seen a Margaret Igor relationship.
Well, obviously, I lobbied for that for a couple of years.
I know you did.
I was exhausted. I had to give up. I mean, you know, it didn't go anywhere. And,
well, the restraining order, I think, is what finally made you stop, right?
It didn't do me any good. It did not do me good.
Okay, let's listen to our friend Mark.
Hey, Jeff and Ryan. Mark Prater here at Hollister, California, one of your Patreon members. I wanted to put something out to you guys that I just barely noticed after all these years of watching MASH. I'm surprised it hasn't been brought up at all in the podcast, but I was recently watching Fade Out, Fade In, the first appearance of Charles Emerson Winchester, and I noticed in the opening credits of both episodes that Larry Linville's name appears for some reason. At first I thought I was seeing things, but I watched it again and saw it happen again, and I had it on Apple TV. So I checked on Hulu, and sure enough, the same thing happened. I haven't had a chance to check it all on the DVDs or not, but I find it interesting this would happen, because wouldn't Larry Linville have to get paid for those episodes if he was listed on the credits, even if he didn't have a part in it? Just a question there. But anyways, guys, you guys are awesome. The podcast is awesome. You guys are the best. Keep up the great work. We will catch you soon.
So this is in reference to the episode where David Ogden Stiers makes his first appearance and Frank is gone. This is the beginning of season 6. Larry Linville has left the series. The character Frank has not officially left yet. He leaves in the middle of that particular episode. But Larry Linville's name is in the credits of that particular episode in some of the versions. I think maybe on the DVDs it's not, but on Hulu and some other places it is. Now, there's two different things to address. Why was it there? And he asked the question, would he have to get paid if his name was in the credits, even if he wasn't on the show? Jeff, can you speak to that? Do you know if somebody is not on the show, but their name appears in the credits, are they supposed to get paid for that?
I don't know.
Okay, great. Moving on.
Moving on. let me think.
I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's a weird kind of occurrence that he was not on the series anymore.
Right.
And yet his name appeared in this episode, even though he had left the series.
I think whatever monetary consideration that he was to receive would have been worked out before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, and I'd have to look up my SAG rule book to understand this, but I don't know whether just having your names in a credit actually entitles you to get paid. I don't know that. It's possible. But even had he not been listed in the credits, whatever he had worked out with 20th Century Fox that he would get paid, he was going to get paid, period.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether there's leverage in having your name in the credits in terms of getting monetary salary. I don't know.
And I don't know why his name was in the credits. Both his name and David Ogden Stiers' names are in the credits, which is the only episode that ever happens.
It could have been contractual.
It could have been, yeah. I know they wanted him to come back and film some scenes for that episode, and that he said no. And there's even online sources that suggest that he did film scenes talking on the phone, but there's no official confirmation of that. Everything I've heard is that he did not want to come back for season six at all. There are others online speculating that maybe it's because Frank, even though he's absent, he still plays a significant role in the episode. Hawkeye and BJ talk to him on the phone. They get updates of his escapades as he's trying to follow Margaret on her honeymoon, but we never see him. So I just wonder if the producers didn't want to completely tip their hand that Frank was gone, and maybe they left his name in the credits for that one reason, for that one episode. I don't know. The viewers left to wonder if he is returning to the episode or not, and they find out in the course of the episode that he's not returning. That's just my theory. That's speculation, but I do not know why.
Don't know. You got us.
Way to go, Mark. You got us.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, and thank you, Mark, for your support on Patreon. We want to say hello to some other folks who support us on Patreon, including Private Cake Mastermind,
Private Karen Stevenson,
Private Bruce Lish,
Corporal Benson Anspach,
Corporal Greg Barnett,
Corporal Dan Gettinger,
Captain Kevin Stallings,
Captain Doug Kaufman,
Captain Mark Colazzi,
Major Heath Daniels,
and Major Megan Bridget. Thank you for your support at Patreon. You can support the show for as little as $3 a month and get some cool, interesting perks in return. Just go to matchmatters.com/support. All right, we have a few more voicemails. Here's one from someone who, they didn't give us their name, but here's their question.
The question is, you see a power line going right next to the post office board. Why is there a power line if they run off of generators? I love the podcast so far. I just found it the other day. Thank you.
Well, unknown caller, the reason the power lines are in the 4077th, even though they run off generators, is the same reason that they have plungers for the outhouse.
I have nothing more to comment. I'm perfectly done. I don't know.
All right. Here is Shay.
Hi, my name is Shay Ramos. I wanted to say collectively that, in my opinion, never before, never since has there been a better show than MASH. The folks that made up MASH, the actors and actresses, wow. 100% wow. And if anyone in their right mind ever has the thought to try to redo it or remake it, I really hope they stop and tell themselves no. I don't think that something like that, with the magic and blessings that it had to have the wonderful people that made it up and made it happen, I don't think it can be redone. So I hope they don't even try. Aces. Aces to every one of you. Aces. Just a blessing. Thank you. Thank you for doing it and making it what it was. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, I have always been in the camp of no remake. It's perfect as is. That said, somewhere down the line, they could do it. They could reboot the show, and they could do it to give it a lot more edge and show what it was truly really like in combat in a medical unit. If you look at a series like Band of Brothers, and you see how intense and how gritty it is, and you see how bad it really was in battle, they could probably do that with a medical unit. I would say, why not take it to a different MASH? Let's see the 8063rd. So we're not trying to recreate Hawkeye and BJ and Radar and everybody. It's a whole new cast of characters. I wouldn't mind watching a series like that where we see what we couldn't see on primetime television in 1978, but you can see now is the stark reality of what they were dealing with. That I wouldn't be opposed to.
I'm with you.
As long as Igor makes an appearance and you get residuals.
At least 19 episodes.
Yes.
In the first 20.
Absolutely. Two more voicemails. We're almost through this marathon, Jeff. Here is Stacy.
Hi, Jeff and Ryan. My name is Stacy Dresnick. I'm in Youngstown, Ohio. And I wanted to comment. We were talking about at one point whether was there another reference to a banana daiquiri. In The Korean Surgeon, Season 5, Episode 9, Hawkeye says to the Korean surgeon, they even managed to develop a banana daiquiri. So that was a second reference, besides Colonel Blake's trying to get them to make one in the officers' club. Hawkeye did state to the Korean surgeon that America has managed to create and develop the banana daiquiri. So that was the second reference. Again, it's Stacey Dresnick, Youngstown, Ohio.
That's a deep callback right there. We talked about banana daiquiris many episodes ago.
Yeah.
Now we know what the other reference was to the banana daiquiri, thanks to Stacey. And now I want one.
Yeah.
Right?
I was just going to say, I want a banana daiquiri.
Sounds delicious.
It does, doesn't it? I don't think I've ever had a banana daiquiri.
I haven't either.
Well, we should have ourselves a couple of thermos bowls of banana daiquiri.
And then record a podcast. That would be interesting.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to Mash Matters.
We can do the Mash Matters drinking game, and we have to do a shot of a banana daiquiri every time we say something stupid.
Let's do it.
We'd be drunk like in 5 minutes. Okay. One more. Here we are. The final voicemail of the episode. This one coming to us from Toby.
Hey, this is Toby from Ohio. I just remember something I've seen on Facebook. The Fonz on Happy Days was supposed to be called The Mash until The Mash was a thing, and they ended up changing his name. So maybe you guys can look into it and give everybody deep insight on that and let us know about that story. Thanks, guys. Y'all take care. Bye-bye.
I found the article that he's referring to. It's from MeTV, and it's true. The earliest episodes of Happy Days, the Fonz was almost not called the Fonz. Gary Marshall had another name in mind. It was in honor of his father, Arthur Mascarelli, who had changed his Italian surname to something more American-sounding. So as a tribute to his roots, the character of Fonz was originally called Arthur Mascarelli, and the shortener for that nickname was The Mash.
The Mash.
Not the Fonz, The Mash. But the problem was, MASH, the series, was in the top 10 already on network television. ABC did not want to remind people there was a great show called MASH on CBS, so they made Gary Marshall change the name, and they went with Arthur Fonzarelli and became The Fonz. Had MASH not been successful or had never been on television, The Fonz would have been The Mash.
Well, I'm personally very glad it didn't happen, because The Mash is a dumb name. I don't think it would have worked at all. Oh, hi, it's The Mash. Oh, give me a break. The Fonz works. Fonzie, hey, come on.
Right?
You can't say, The Mash is here. What? That doesn't work at all.
What could have been? Thank you, Toby, for alerting us. We'll put a link to that article and links to all the articles we referred to in the show notes for this episode that is now over.
Ta-da! Is that it?
We're done.
No more.
Oh, we have more. We have more voicemails. Believe it or not, that wasn't all of the voicemails we have. That was most of them, but not all of them. And I know that we're going to have more voicemails coming in because of this episode. And that's great. We want to hear from you at 513-436-4077. And you can also email us at mashmatterspodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can just come over to the house.
Porch lights on.
Yeah.
Until next time, here's looking up your old address.